Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 103 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make theater happen. You can find all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other fine podcasting streaming services. And if you have a spare 30 seconds, please rate and review us on whichever platform you use to help us be more discoverable to listeners who haven't heard about us yet. And now for this week's podcast. Last week, we brought you the first part of a two-part episode with Polly Bennett, the movement director behind Rami Malek's breathtaking transformation into Queen frontman Freddie Mercury for the hit film Bohemian Rhapsody. And in this episode, although Polly does chat a little bit more about how anyone can use techniques employed on the film, we really wanted to delve deep into her passion project and full-time job as creator of co-creator, I should say, of the Monobox. The Monobox is one of the best resources around for emerged actors, a word that Polly is owning, and to be honest, I absolutely love. The Monobox hosts events at their headquarters in the Biscuit Factory in Bermondsey, and these include workshops for acting skills, audition prep and casting, directing, devising, improv, Shakespeare, physical and movement, you name it. The Monobox have a workshop for it. And this includes their most popular event, their speech surgeries, which they hold monthly, where participants are invited to browse Monobox's extensive play archive network and then take part in a Q&A with industry professionals from all walks of life. Now, I have both attended and taken part in these panels, and they are probably the most cost-effective way, brilliant way, to extend your network and grow as an actor or director or someone in the business in any field. But why don't I stop talking and let Polly tell you all about it as she continues her conversation with Curtain Call's co-founder, Matt Humphrey, and also Curtain Call's Theo Bosanquet. Have a listen.
I have to say, your work with Rami is outstanding. He doesn't just mimic Freddie, he embodies Freddie. And I think that's what you were talking about in terms of practicalizing the thought process and the feeling and the history and the emotions behind every movement. And it's just extraordinary. So congratulations.
Thank you for saying. I mean, it's a big job. It's a big fear that it would turn into seeing someone at a karaoke doing a bit of Freddie Mercury on a Saturday night. You know, there is always that fear, but as long as it turns into something that comes out of who that person fundamentally is, in the same way now as if I said, oh, Theo, please go on, you're going to do a karaoke song. What karaoke song are you going to do? If you just come up with a song that you might perform?
Wonderwall.
Wonderwall, lovely. So you might then perform it with all of the things that you've ever seen. So I'm, you know, hasten to add, perhaps you're not a performer, Theo, but you might start acting as Liam Gallagher because that will make people laugh, or that feels right because that's something that you've seen, or you might rock out loads because you've seen that make people enjoy things before. So in the same way, Freddie Mercury, you look at him and go, well, he really liked Liza Minnelli. He really loved going to the opera. So you see that in his body where he pulls poses and he is really flamboyant because of the things that he enjoys. So we've all got the possibility to move based on what we see and what we love. So I watch the film and I go, I can see the work and I can see the value of physical work, which I've always known, but now what is amazing is that people are seeing it and being able to speak about it, and from peers and actors that I've worked with who now are making the connection between the work that I've done with them and Rami. How amazing is that? That's such a great cyclical thing. But also Queen fans are, I'm getting messages from Queen fans being like, this is amazing, you've made Freddie live on. I was really nervous about so-and-so playing Freddie Mercury and how dear this person is to them. And and I know now that we've done the work right, with a lot of hard work and a lot of teamwork and a lot of fundamentally trust and friendship in order to make that happen, which goes back to, you know, seeing who's in front of you and making sure you don't lose sight of the actor in the fray.
We should talk a little bit about another project, if you want. You know, just a little project on the side you've got going.
Yeah.
Which is a full-blown, massively successful company called The Monobox.
Yeah.
Which Curtain Call has partnered with for a number of years now and has done amazing work with actors at all stages of their careers. Could you just sort of explain for the uninitiated a little bit about what it is and where the idea for it came from?
Yeah, so The Monobox has been running for just over 5 years. And it's a company that myself and my best mate Joan Iola, who is in her own right an incredible actor and activist and you know, project maker, and we started this back in the day where, you know, it's so amazing again to talk about this stuff, because we started this when no one was giving us any jobs. You know, this was like both when we moved to London, and I moved to London, and Joan was still training in Bristol, and she was training at Bristol Vic, and we would start sharing a sort of across borders what we were both doing, and I'd be going, I'm working in TV and this is happening and this actor can't do this, and she'd be talking to me about how that would make her feel if she was an actor, and I would equally be going to see plays in London and calling her and saying, you know what, you should really get in touch with this playwright because he's got some amazing things, maybe you could use it for your showcase. So The Monobox kind of started out of that conversation and that friendship, really, which was about sharing and passing over information. And because that's something that we recognise, certainly from being young actors in, you know, or certainly when I was pretending I was an actor, that you get information and you hold on to it and you keep it for yourself. And you go, well, this is my monologue and I will not tell anybody else about this monologue because it is mine and I will be fantastic at it. And if anyone else has it, then I won't do very well. And that's quite a negative space to put your brain in. So The Monobox started because we were looking for ways of engaging other people to share their stories and to share their insight. And we were lucky enough to be working on things when we started with lots of people that established in the industry. So we started asking them, what play would you offer to a young person to read? And sure enough, to skip a few steps, we then started receiving play donations from people, from, you know, Carol Churchill sends an anthology through the post, sure, and then Dame Judi Dench is like, hey, I've never done this play, you can have this because I'm never going to get a chance to play it, or David Tennant sends us his favourite play that we've never heard of, and all of these play texts are inscribed with people's advice. And that really now is the heart of what The Monobox does. We've got a huge play collection of about 3,000 plays that live in our space at the Biscuit Factory in Bermondsey. And as a result of all of this information and all of the conversations that stem from these plays, we set up workshops and events and courses and opportunities to engage with the professional industry. Whether or not you are an emerging actor, if we want to use that rubbish word, an emerged actor, a word that is never used, or someone that is working and working things through or coming back to acting. So, you know, I think we're learning to be more open about all of the things that The Monobox does, because this is our... It has so much mentally been for us a side project that we've been doing alongside our other things, and now it is a full-time job. You know, I was sitting on the set of Bohemian Rhapsody doing my emails for The Monobox at some times, yeah. Because it's the demand for it is so high and the love for it is so high because it's about sharing and it's about a community and creating a community, and we have done that and we are doing that. And we, you know, at the moment we're mentoring 5 new playwrights to create new work, providing them with a professional playwright mentor, giving them directors, engaging and mentoring the directors, helping them cast, providing access for actors to come in and be in these plays and get a showcase in London. There is so much going on, and it's all in response to the things that we see in rehearsal rooms and the things that we hear at events. So yeah, it's a big nourishment melting pot, really. And every time I think it's for the young actors that come to it, I actually go, oh, it's so much for me as well. I get to think about everything in the monobox space and learn from all the people that that are asking for things, because I go, oh yeah, that is what actors need. I'll think about that, then I go into my rehearsal room and I activate that thought. So it's all making me a better practitioner. It's making Joan a better actor. It's making us think a bit bigger than ourselves. So if we know that we're doing that as two co-founders, we know that everybody else that comes into that space is doing that for themselves as well. And it's amazing to see what, you know, the people that have come through the doors of the Monobox have achieved in the last 5 years. Some people got into drama school, come out of drama school, got agents, are in professional shows that I'm now movement directing. It's just, it's extraordinary seeing that, the long-standing effects of the work of the Monobox.
Polly, I wondered if there'll be a lot of actors listening to this, and directors, of course, and other theatre professionals. And I wondered if you would be able to maybe impart just a couple of either very general or very specific pointers to them when it comes to their approach to characters and their approach maybe to the rehearsal process in general. What are the kind of... I know this is a really hard question to ask of someone with such a broad specialism, but if there were a couple of sort of key pointers, what would they be?
That's a huge responsibility to say something like that. Let's think about this. I mean, I think there is... I mean, what I'm trying to say in terms of my work with the Monobox is that I haven't learned everything yet and will never learn everything. So I guess a piece of advice I could turn that into is to up your curiosity and to see what other people's positives can do for you. And by that, it's not that they're going to give you anything, but it's that you can be nourished by being around other people and engaging other people in your practice. So I think there is certainly a thing, especially within the UK, having spent a bit of time in America last year, where we don't really engage in training after a training period. So, and by that I mean you come out of drama school, you've done a course, and you've done the thing. Well, I've done the thing, so that's it, done it. So now I've just got to wait for other people to give me the opportunity to do the thing. And actually, I think that's a really scary space to be in. And I think, if anything, that my personal career as a movement director has shown me is that you have never learnt it all, and it's about and a lot of the positive things that have happened to me in terms of opportunities are because I've put myself in situations that are scary or I'm nervous about going into. And I will say that back in the day I would sign up for workshops or I'd sign up to dance classes and I would pay for them and I would turn up at the door and I would walk away because there was something that was stopping me, because I thought I don't want to be the worst, and actually I already know this, so actually it's fine. And that therefore the tussle in us as artists everywhere is to think that we know everything and equally that we know nothing. And I'm saying that if you continue to train in whatever way that means for you, whether that's doing a history of art course, whether that means taking up photography, whether that means reading Shakespeare plays one a week with a mate, there is something that you will take yourself over the edge in some way and something new will come of it. So that's a kind of meandering way of saying keep curious and keep active about your craft. If I hadn't had the experience of my history of art degree and working in a PR office, as I did also when I was jobless and confused in London when I started out, I wouldn't think about things the way that I do now. So actually there's a real... I wouldn't have looked into Freddie Mercury the way that I did. So I guess I'm saying that maybe for an actor, if you engage in all of these things, all of the things that you have done, what your heritage is, what your experience is, you will be more... You will be a better craftsperson. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
It's to not avoid the things that you've done, and everything will feed into everything else. And if you put yourself, or you get into those situations where you don't think you know it all, actually the best things will happen. So I say keep training, in the same way that I go to Monobox workshops, Joan goes to Monobox workshops, we both attend the things, we're practicing what we preach, because if you stop yourself, you will literally stop yourself, and then everyone will know what you can do. But if you surprise yourself, if you engage a little bit deeper, I think something good will come.
Wow, that's, well, I mean, fantastic words to finish on. I should ask quickly about the old what's next question, which it's probably quite a convoluted one to deal with, but let's talk a little bit longer term. What's your it's always difficult to have a specific plan, but you know, where would you like to be in 10 years?
Yes.
Nice and easy one to end on.
It's funny because I think I've, as I said right at the beginning, I've sort of landed in lots of different jobs. I've landed in places, and it was only going to see Bohemian Rhapsody this weekend by myself, because I just needed a little moment to go, look at what I've done. Because as a movement person, you spend quite a lot of time, as I said, being invisible. You're sort of in the background, but also at the forefront. But then you sort of disappear when the director gets credited with the success of a production, or the actors get accoladed. You know, that we don't have very many public showings of appreciation for movement directors. And by that I mean, you know, there's a Best Choreography What's on Stage Award, but there's no movement direction. Or there's a Best Poster Award, but there's no movement director. Or there's... I'm currently nominated for a Broadway World Award against Hamilton for Best Choreography. I did a show at Stratford East, which is an amazing show, but... How can you match that juggernaut? How, like, it's so glorious to be acknowledged, but you're also you're also not acknowledged. So I guess there are two things in answer to your question, which is I would love movement directors to be acknowledged, and to critics to write with an affection for the physical world. Because the more that we get on our mobile phones and the more that we disconnect from human beings on a daily basis, the easier it's going to be not to look for those visual clues in theatre work. So there is something in terms of... I'm trying to, at the moment, be a spear holder, I think. I'm about to meet lots of young movement directors for Payne's Plough, because I approached Payne's Plough and said, like, one of my first jobs was with you, and I'm trying to make sure that there is somewhere, in the same way that the RSC was for me, there is somewhere for people to practice being a movement director. So I want to... I'm feeling like I'm getting enraged and passionate, but it's because I want to make sure that there is something going on there with all of the other people that are tantalising around with movement direction. I want to make sure that I have given back into that that job and this role, and that there is more opportunity for it, because I think it is important, not just for people that have aspirations, but I think it is important for theatre, for film, for actor psychology, and I'm going to go big, for the world. I think physical stuff is really important. You've got to move. So that's one part of my sort of 10-year plan, if you want to say that. Not that I've ever written this down, or, you know, I don't have a set place to make that happen, but I just know that there is something in me that has to tickle that and to grow that that thought. And then separately, I'm now at a position where I've done a lot of gorgeously big, exciting projects, from stadium gigs to films to theatre, and I am now in a position where I want to make sure that I'm making good choices about the people that I'm spending that rehearsal time with. So I want to continue over the next 10 years working with good people, because I feel like I know what that is a bit more now, because I've magpied lots of different experiences. And maybe that means that I won't be crashing movement projects over the top of each other. Maybe that means that I might do a film a year. Maybe that means that I will take some more time to be in the universe, to feed my practice, because it's very easy to go where the shiny things are and burn yourself out. And as I've experienced, I've worked very hard, so I think it's about not working any less hard, but it's taking more time to experience the jobs and see the value in the jobs. So I think I would like to continue that, which I think with those two different things, merge them together, and I would love to be someone that is can put all of this stuff into practice, whether that means that I'll put it out there in the universe, because maybe this will work, run a building, be a director, or be an artistic director that isn't a director, because that's a whole other topic, a whole other ball game. But it could happen, because I'm seeing actor's craft, I'm dramaturging physically plays and productions, and that could all come together in something a little off kilter, a little unexpected. But when has anything in my life been expected thus far? So you never know.
Polly Bennett there, Monobox co-founder and movement director to the theater and film industry. Now, before we wrap up, if you are a theater professional, head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free profile page. Just create an account with an email address, make up a password, and off you go. You can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, at Curtain Call, all lowercases, all one word, no spaces. We'd love to hear from you if you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast. Just get in touch with us via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me personally at john@curtaincallonline.com. And now just leaves me to say another huge thank you to Polly Bennett. You can currently see her work on the big screen in Bohemian Rhapsody and on stage in the Layman Trilogy, which you'll be able to see in New York very soon at the Armory before it comes back to London to play the Wyndham Theatre in London's West End, I should say. That's where it is in 2019. You can check out everything the Monobox is doing by heading over to their website, themonobox.co.uk. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, and I will catch you all next week. Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.